This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. Great to have you with us for the Monday, August 19th edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Jennifer Kuiper in for Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. On today's Noon Business Hour, we'll talk about the financial week ahead, what's coming up. McDonald's is launching a new type of a restaurant that is in London, and the president says he has talked tariffs during a sit-down with Apple CEO. Also, how to handle your next job interview if you have been fired from the last job. As we mentioned, Chicago-based McDonald's is introducing its first new style of restaurant in decades. We'll learn about that in our next segment. Right now, the week ahead will include fresh numbers on home sales, plus the release of minutes from the latest meeting of the Fed. Let's get a preview from Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and political economist at andrewbush.com. Andy, what's driving the rally on Wall Street today? I mean, we're looking at the Dow now up almost 300 points.
Yeah, this is continuation of the bounce that we had last week on Friday, carrying over the weekend. We did have some positive indications from the president, as your reporter mentioned, on some of his tweets. It's kind of hard to figure out what half these tweets are. There's so many of them, but it looks like the U.S. is moving forward on having some conversations with the Chinese on trade. We've got some anecdotal evidence that China's trying to reach out and find a way, finding a solution. But this is what I've been warning people for some time. Look, the president can make a decision on this anytime he wants, both negatively and positively. So we've gone through a bad stretch where we were down 800 points last week in the Dow. Now we're trying to, now that the president kind of got, you know, recognized that that's a huge problem, so he's walking back some of this negative discussion. And as you mentioned as well, the Commerce Department maybe, you know, delaying some of those sanctions on Huawei. And there's just a few other things that have happened. So it's not all as negative as everybody points out. And so that's what you got to keep in mind with what's happening here.
White House trade advisor Pete Navarro yesterday said that it's a certainty that the bull market will last through 2020. Andy, is that too optimistic?
Well, I'd like to know if there's anything in life that there's that much certainty besides death and taxes. So I would say this, as long as the Federal Reserve has decided to ease monetary conditions, that's always the biggest thing that's going to drive asset values for the time being in the United States and really around the globe. And we know this is happening. Fed cut rates, we're going to get out on Wednesday, the minutes from that meeting. We'll hear more insights into what they're thinking. Around the world, we're going to see the European Central Bank probably act in September. We know the Chinese are trying to ease some conditions there. They may be cutting rates too. So there's a lot of monetary things that are pushing asset values, and that's really good. The question is whether or not they'll actually have an impact on the economy. That we're not so sure of. It's going to be less than what it was back when the Fed first started doing a bunch of these things. But for the time being, as far as asset values go and stocks, it's good news.
And as far as overseas, Russia and China have had an exchange on soybeans. What's that all about?
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? There's a Russian official who came out and said, hey, you know, we'd love to supply you with as many soybeans as you want, but quite frankly, we can't do it. We almost can't supply enough soybeans to our own country, and the protein value and the content of the soybeans is not up to the U.S. So I think that must have been a wake-up call for a lot of the Chinese buyers that were out there. They can look for other sources around the United States, Brazil obviously being one of them, but honestly, there's just no one that has as good a content, especially high protein content and quality of soybeans as the U.S. does. So I think that may have been also a little bit of a wake-up call to the Chinese politicians and, of course, President Xi when it comes to these things. At some point, China's consumers are going to be really negatively impacted by the lack of U.S. corn agricultural products, soybeans, and so on. and it's going to hit them in their pocketbooks probably at a time that China's really slowing down economically, and we saw that from recent numbers.
Andrew Bush, political economist at andrewbush.com in Chicago. For the first time since the debut of the drive-through many years ago, McDonald's is trying out a new kind of store. Let's get details from Phil Lempert, founder of supermarketguru.com. Phil, tell us a bit about what this what a new restaurant looks like.
Well, Jennifer, what's really interesting about this is it's not new. I think back when I was 16 years old and I worked for McDonald's, basically there was no seating. You just had a little window that somebody would come up, order it, and you'd give them their bag with a Big Mac fries and a shake, and they'd be on their way. So now what McDonald's is testing is that whole concept, but fast-tracked using new technology. Now, this store is being tested in London. Basically, you walk into the store. They don't have any employees. You have to order by kiosk. You have to pay by credit card, and basically there's no seating. You just take your food, and you need to walk away.
Now, other restaurant chains have tried the kiosk route, but they've also kept the people at the cash registers to try to give the customer that welcome feeling. Is this going to be a little too cold, or do you think people in London are running around so much they just don't care?
I don't think it's going to be too cold. The reason that McDonald's is testing this, let's not forget, and the reason it'll probably come here, is minimum wages are going up. So it's too expensive when you're going to sell a burger on a dollar menu to be paying somebody $15 an hour and having to clean the restaurant, having to rearrange the seats, having cashiers. So we're really getting forced into this. The one thing that a lot of pundits have talked about since the whole $15 an hour movement has surfaced is, frankly, that it's going to eliminate a lot of jobs. Yes, some people are going to make a little bit more money, but probably one out of every five jobs are going to be eliminated, especially in fast food restaurants where they just can't afford that kind of wage.
How long do you think McDonald's will give this for a test run here, this McDonald's to-go restaurant in London?
I think it's going to happen very quickly. I think that it will be tested maybe just for 3 months, and then you're going to see them roll out in a test here in the U.S. as well. And I wouldn't be surprised within 2-3 years, we're going to see a couple thousand of these across the country.
Could see some labor pushback on this one, too, because you mentioned the cutting off of employees, the cutting down of employees.
Exactly. I mean, the labor situation is tough for every retailer, whether it's fast food, whether it's a supermarket, and they really have to use technology in order to offset that cost increase.
Phil Lempert, founder of supermarketguru.com, thanks for joining us. Good stuff. And up next, helping make sure getting fired doesn't derail your career.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Getting fired from a job can be traumatic, but it's something you need to deal with, not only on a personal level, but also on a professional one. Let's get some insight from Rick Cobb, Executive Vice President, Challenger, Gray & Christmas. And Rick, you're sitting in that chair in front of a potential employer. Thing is, you were fired from the last job. So how do you handle this one?
Sure. Well, I think what's critical before I get in that chair is that I should try to avoid the conversation until the question's asked. So we don't want to come into the interview with the idea that, hey, I have a felony record. What did you want to ask me? Because no one will be able to see past that. I think the other thing, and you pointed this out a minute ago in your intro, is that you have to deal with the emotional components of what happened and be ready for that question. And then the third piece is you really want to practice your answer with things that aren't as important. So with your neighbors and friends, and also with jobs that you aren't as interested in, that's a great place to sort of become more comfortable with the response. Now, why did you get fired? Was it economic? Was it a reorganization? Was it just a reporting relationship change, which is a big piece of why most people lose a job? Did you make a mistake? Or the smallest one of those is malfeasance, where you actually did something wrong. You have to own it. You can't lie. So when you finally get to that point, you have to be able to say something that you can live with, which does not say anything bad about the company you were at, says as little bad about you as possible, And then move on. And that's a matter of saying, you know, unfortunately, in the last economic downturn, we lost a major account. I probably own some of that. Here's the reason why. I've learned from it. You know, once you've done something like that, you know you'll never do it again.
So
and then go back to the things that you've done that are useful.
So keep in mind, it's not a therapy session. It's you're there for a purpose. And some people are talkers, too. So keep it brief, right?
Yep. Absolutely, yeah. And the more questions you ask and the more you listen, the more the potential employer is going to give you examples of things they need. And in a tight market like now, they may say, oh, really, that's interesting. I did this, this, and this, and this is the result. Is that what you're talking about? Yes, actually. And you can talk about your features and benefits and get away from the mistake.
There are a lot of opportunities out there right now. We've seen quite a bit of hiring that's been done. Getting a new job in this tight labor market, is there room for negotiation?
But yes, but the timing's critical. So the negotiation happens after the offer. And so sometimes someone with a strong STEM background or science background may feel like they have all the cards. Well, you may walk on water, but it's not going to be on my pond. And I still have to like you. And so you want them to make the offer first. And then once the offer is made, you have a chance now to negotiate. And you think about the opportunity and say, okay, even though it's great, what would make it better? Or even it's not what I would want, but what would make it something I would be interested in? And then you have to put that forward to the hirer, the potential hirer, as a problem or as something for them to solve. I really love A, B, and C. I'm concerned about moving out of state with my children in high school. What can we do? What can we possibly do about that and make it their problem? And that's the way that you would negotiate most effectively without saying no or creating ultimatums.
And Rick, what are the, just briefly, what would be one of the most important things that employers are looking for from potential employees now that would put them over the top?
Yeah, well, I think that they're always, if you're in the room, chances are pretty good you have some of the basic skill sets they're looking for, whether it's a science background or mathematics or experience or social. I think what they're always looking for, particularly in the North American market, is that you get me, that you understand the chemistry and the culture of what I think the company is. Often people go to market trying to figure out what the company needs. That doesn't matter. It's what they want. You can solve needs later, but you have to get in by doing what they want. So identifying their pain points, figuring out what you've done that's alleviated that pain, and articulating that's the best way to get in.
Rick Cobb, Executive Vice President, Challenger Gray and Christmas here in Chicago. And still ahead, Disney reveals more about the launch of its streaming service.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The competition in streaming services heats up as companies like Disney choose to keep their content to themselves. It's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get a couple of suggestions from an investing pro. Police in the far northern suburbs investigate two deaths in the same home. President Trump is discounting talk of a possible recession. WBBM Business, the markets are up this hour. Oil right now is up almost 2%. AccuWeather says humid today, a shower or thunderstorm possible this afternoon south of Chicago, a high 85, but mainly in the 70s at the lakefront. 81 degrees at O'Hare and Midway, 78 at the lakefront, and the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues, sponsored, presented by, that is, the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are starting the week in plus territory. We are joined by Vahan Janjigian, and that's Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. And we were looking at a much different situation just less than a week ago, let's say dicey. So what might we be looking at this week coming up? We have existing home sales coming out. What else? And how is it looking on the markets right now? We see everything up.
Well, I think the only thing that matters right now is what's going on with trade. The markets have been reacting to the latest news about trade, whether President Trump is going to impose additional tariffs or whether he's going to postpone tariffs. So every day the market is reacting to any kind of news that seems to indicate that perhaps the U.S. and China will finally reach a deal or perhaps a deal won't be reached. I don't think it has anything to do with anything else right now. It's not reacting so much to earnings reports, and it's not reacting to the fact that the Fed hasn't been more aggressive in reducing interest rates. Those things, of course, do affect the market, but I think at this point they're playing a very small part. It's all about trade.
How about what's driving the market today, though? Are we looking at tech driving this? Is that why we're seeing some things up as well?
No, we're seeing things up today because over the weekend there were reports, and early this morning there are reports that the U.S. and China are still speaking, that perhaps a deal will eventually be reached, and that's what we're reacting to. Of course, some sectors of the market are doing better than others. The tech sector today is doing quite well, but it seems to be a pretty strong rally across the board. We're even seeing small cap stocks, which had really been lagging, they're even doing pretty well today.
Well, trade, you say, also, you know, last week we were talking about the inverted yield curve, scared some investors, of course, but like we've seen, the market's coming back. And has this also been a case of investors stepping back and taking a look at the whole U.S. economic picture, the employment, GDP output, the possibility of more easing by the Fed, in addition to the good news over the weekend from internationally?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of things in the economy that people are focused on. Of course, the unemployment rate is very low. The economy, for the most part, is doing pretty well. There's no question that GDP growth is slowing. But right now, I think it's too early to predict that we're going to have a recession in the near future. As I always say, we will always have a recession. A recession is always around the corner, but we can't be sure when it happens. It's just part of the normal business cycle. However, when people see these tariffs and trade issues being discussed, and it looks like we're going to see higher tariffs, they get afraid that the economy is going to slow down. That fear that the tariffs are going to cause an economic slowdown is also what's causing the yield curve to invert. So this inversion of the yield curve, in my opinion, has nothing to do with what the Fed has done. Interest rates are already incredibly low, so it makes no difference whether the Fed reduces rates by a quarter point or 50 basis points or holds them steady. It's just the fear that the economy may slow down because of tariffs. That's what's causing investors to get very nervous.
One company that's really concerned about tariffs, it would be Apple, and Apple Chief Tim Cook said, or the president said that he talked to Tim Cook. And what is it that Apple is most concerned about? Is it what's the Samsung not being hit with the same tariffs here?
Well, you know, Apple does produce a lot of its phones in China, and a tariff increase on goods from China is going to cause iPhones and other Apple products to really go up in price. And that will really hit consumers, even though the White House claims that China will pay for the tariffs and not the consumers. So Tim Cook knows that if these tariffs go into effect, it's going to affect U.S. consumers. It's also going to cause problems with Apple trying to sell its products in China. A lot of Chinese people will boycott American products if there's a trade war between the U.S. and China. And he also mentioned Samsung, because Samsung products, for the most part, are produced in Korea, and they would not be subject to the tariffs. So Tim Cook was basically arguing that if you impose these tariffs, you're giving an advantage to our competitors who won't be subject to the tariffs.
Any advice for individual investors, places to look at that are kind of hot right now?
Well, you know, my best advice to all investors is to focus on your asset allocation. We went through a period of time where stocks have done extremely well, and so that might be an opportunity to cut back on your asset allocation to equities, to rebalance your portfolio. But you should always remain in the market. You should never be in a situation where you're 100% invested or 100% out of the market. Depending on your situation, on your risk profile, you got to focus on that asset allocation.
Vahan Janjigian, thank you so much for joining us, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management. Up next, there's a notable exception to where Disney will be locating its streaming service.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
We're learning more about where the new Disney streaming service will be available. Let's get the latest from Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO, the Verte Group. And Tim, what exactly is Disney Plus going to offer us?
Hi, Jennifer. The Disney Plus app was announced a number of months ago and will hit the United States and a few other markets in early November. I think it's November the 12th, as a matter of fact. And it is literally the amalgam of the best of the Disney studios, inclusive of a lot of the Fox Studios content and Star Wars and Muppets and you name sort of a Pixar, you name all the great stuff that Disney wants to bring to the table. And that app comes to market with a number of different platforms. But interestingly, one of the platforms that they did not announce that it will, i.e. not be available on, is on the Amazon Fire platform. But yet it will be available just about everywhere else.
Some may ask, what? Not Amazon? I mean, that must be a surprise to some.
Yeah, I think it comes down to economics and strategy. So while it will, the Disney Plus app, as well as, by the way, Disney's sister apps, ESPN Plus and Hulu, are going to be available on places like Roku and on the Google Chromecast, various Android devices and mobile devices, Xboxes and PlayStations. I believe they're not on Amazon because Amazon likes to have programmers available on the Amazon platform for purchase that Amazon would share revenue in any subscriptions generated. I think what Disney wants to do is be able to allow the app to exist and allow people to subscribe to that app directly without any intermediary, and that is not currently in Amazon's business model when it comes to app-driven TV channels.
How will Disney's move impact Netflix?
Well, a gigantic question that I believe should come out in favor of the consumer, in that Disney Plus, in addition to the two other apps that Disney brings to the table, ESPN Plus and Hulu, which they now own 100% of. You package those three apps together, perhaps maybe you add in a Netflix and maybe an over-the-air antenna, and that may be all that most consumers may want and be satisfied with to watch television going forward. But it is going to be a substantially strong offering that will either counter what Netflix offers or supremely complement it.
Tim, with Disney expanding this, expanding their role here, are they pulling back on some other sort of media that isn't working for them?
So, you know, that's another sort of magical question that nobody sort of has the full answer to. I think it's, I would call it a general balancing act, because Disney obviously sells through to lots of cable networks and TV stations and networks. They've got a lot of programming to sell that they don't necessarily want to just put just on their own service. But I think they're going to try to balance that as best as they can. But they've got to have a direct-to-consumer service at least on the table, and that's what this is all about for now.
Tim Hanlon, the founder and CEO of the Vertera Group in Chicago, thank you for joining us. And join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. Still to come, our Monday stock picker.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It is Stock Picker Monday. Helping us out today is Mike Larson, senior analyst, WeissRatings.com. A return guest, welcome. And what's hot today, Mike?
Sure. Well, it's not really just a case of what's hot today. It's what's been hot for really the last 12 to 18 months. And the funny thing is, the more boring a stock is and the more boring the sector it's in, the better it's performing. It's utilities, it's consumer staples, it's REITs, really defensive type names that are outperforming in this market, because I think a lot of people are worried about a potential for recession next year. So with that in mind, the first pick that I have is Next Era Energy, ticker symbol NEE. It's the largest electric utility in Florida. It's got about 5.5 million customers, and living down here, they get my payment every month. They've been growing in sectors like alternative energy, solar, wind operations, and so on. And in the most recent quarter, they had adjusted profit up about 15% year over year, plus a dividend yield of about 2.3%. So you kind of throw it all in the mix, you can see why it's a very attractive stock for this environment. It's actually been hitting multiple new highs this year, even as the rest of the market's been generally moving sideways.
Is there something that hasn't been performing well?
Well, I think that, you know, again, it's the more offensive, exciting type sectors, the things like transports, financials, industrials that have been underperforming. Well, these kinds of companies have been doing very well, but I think there's still room for growth in the sort of the safe money, safe stock trend that we've seen for a while now.
Anything in particular out of the Midwest that you're seeing that you like, or is it not so hot?
Well, one of the other companies I like is actually called Crown Castle International. They're a REIT that owns and leases wireless towers, small cells that are used in places where there's a very dense traffic on cell networks and so on. This company is profiting from the 5G rollout and the surge in data usage. It's got adjusted funds from operation that are up about 13% in the most recent quarter, and they just raised their 2019 outlook. So that's another company. Again, it's kind of a specialized REIT. It's got a yield of just over 3% that continues to perform well, and I think will for the remainder of 2019.
Mike, one thing we saw last week was there was kind of a rush on gold because everybody was there was a lot going on. Let's just say that. Has there been a pullback on safe haven metals?
You know, we've certainly seen the metals consolidate in the last few days. Gold was recently down about $14 an ounce today. But I think that even on pullbacks, gold is very attractive going forward. It's in what I consider to be a new bull market, and really that trend was confirmed this spring. So I think just like you would buy stocks on a pullback in a bull market for equities, I think you want to be buying gold and gold miners on pullbacks here moving forward.
So you recommended utilities to look into because that's been going well. Was NextEra Energy is one that you said?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. NextEra Energy, they're one of the biggest electric utilities, ticker symbol NEE. They get a B rating from our Weiss rating system, so pretty high up on the scale. Anything A and B is considered buy. A lot of things going right for that company, a lot of growth, again, in that alternative energy space. So I think that's a good name. That's got safety, it's got some yield, and has capital gains potential as well.
If someone has a little money to play with and they're thinking about taking a chance with something, is there something that you're seeing that you think might have really good potential?
Well, you mentioned, you did bring up the subject of gold, and, you know, again, I think that gold and precious metals are in a bull market. So something like a Wheaton Precious Metals, this ticker symbol is WPM, they're one of these companies that is a gold mine streaming companies, royalties. They don't actually operate the mines themselves. They provide financing to companies that do, and then in exchange for providing that financing, they receive a royalty or a stream of income from the production of that mine. So that's a company that's got a little more risk. I think, again, in an era of rising gold and silver prices, that's a company that probably has a lot of growth potential as well.
Mike Larson, thanks for joining us again. And Mike is senior analyst, WeissRatings.com, out of Florida. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.